God had heard the poor widow's prayer. A few days after the priest had taken our cow, she received a letter from each of her two sisters, Genevieve and Catherine. The former, married to Etienne Aschenbach of St. Thomas, told her to sell all she had and come with her children to live with her. "We have no family," she said, "and God has given us abundance. We shall be happy to share it with you." The latter married in Kamaraska to the Honorable Amiable Dion wrote, "We have learned the sad news of your husband's death. We have lately lost our only son. We wish to fill the emptiness with Charles, your eldest. We shall bring him up as our own, and soon he will be your support. Meanwhile, sell by auction all you have, and go to St. Thomas with your two younger." In a few days, all our furniture was sold. Unfortunately, though I had carefully concealed my cherished Bible, it disappeared. I never discovered what became of it. Had Mother, frightened by the priest, relinquished that treasure? Or had some of her relatives, believing it was their duty, destroyed it? I do not know. I deeply felt the loss. On the following day, with bitter tears and sobs, I bade farewell to my poor mother and young brothers. They went to St. Thomas, and I to Kamaraska. My uncle and aunt welcomed me with sincere affection. When they learned that I wished to become a priest, it was arranged for me to study Latin under Reverend Mr. Morin, vicar of Kamaraska. He was a learned man, about 40 or 50 years old, and had been a priest in Montreal. But, as with the majority of priests, his vow of celibacy was not sufficient guarantee against the charms of one of his beautiful parishioners. The scandal had cost him his position, and the bishop sent him to Kamaraska, where he was not known. He was good to me, and I responded with sincere affection. One day early in 1822, he called me aside and said, "Mr. Varon, the parish priest, is in the habit of giving a great festival on his birthday. Now, the principal citizens of the village wish to present him with a bouquet. I am appointed to write an address and to choose someone to deliver it before the priest. You are the one I have chosen. What do you think?" "But I am very young," I replied. "Your youth will only give more interest," said the priest. "Well, I have no objection, provided the piece is short and that I have time to learn it." All was prepared, and the time arrived. The best society of Kamaraska, about 15 gentlemen and as many ladies, were assembled in the beautiful parlor of the parsonage. Mr. Varon was there when Squire Paschal Tush and his lady entered with me. I was placed in the midst of the guests. My head was crowned with flowers, for I was to present the angel. I was to represent the angel of the parish, chosen to give to their pastor the expression of public admiration and gratitude. When the address was finished, I presented to the priest the beautiful bouquet. Mr. Varon was small but well built. Intelligence and goodness beamed from his expressive black eyes and gracious smile. He was a charming host and passionately fond of these little feats. He was moved to tears upon hearing the address and expressed his joy and gratitude at being so highly appreciated by his parishioners. After the happy pastor had expressed his thanks, The lady sang two or three beautiful songs. The door of the dining room was then opened. Before us stood a long table laden with the most delicious meats and wines that Canada could offer. I had never before been present at a priest's dinner. Besides Mr. Varin and his vicar, three other priests were artistically placed among the most beautiful ladies of the company. The ladies, after honoring us with their presence for an hour or so, retired to the drawing room. Mr. Varin rose and said, "Gentlemen, let us drink to the health of these amiable ladies whose presence has thrown so many charms over the first part of our little feast." Following Mr. Varin, each guest filled and emptied his wine glass. Squire Tosh then proposed the health of the most venerable and beloved priest of Canada, the Reverend Mr. Varin. Again the glasses were filled and emptied, except for mine, for I was seated next to my uncle Dion, who with a stern look said, "If you drink another, I will send you from the table." It would have been difficult to count the healths which were drunk, for after each health a song or a story was called for, several of which produced applause, shouts of joy, and convulsive laughter. When my turn to propose a health came, I wished to be excused, but they refused to exempt me. Arising from my chair, I turned to Mr. Varin and said, "Let us drink to the health of our Holy Father, the Pope." Nobody had yet thought of the Pope, so the mention of his name under such circumstances by a child appeared so droll to the priests and their merry guests that they burst into laughter, stamped their feet, and shouted, "Bravo, bravo, to the health of the Pope!" So many healths could not be drunk without having their natural effect, intoxication. The first to succumb was Father Noel. I had noticed that instead of using his wine glass, he frequently drank from a large tumbler. The symptoms of his intoxication began to show when he endeavored to fill his glass, but his hand shook so that the bottle fell to the floor and broke. Wishing to keep up the merriment, he began to sing a Bacchic song, but could not finish. His head dropped on the table. While attempting to rise, he fell heavily upon his chair. The other priests and their guests just looked at him, laughing loudly. In a desperate effort, he arose, but after taking two or three steps, fell headlong on the floor. His two neighbors came to his aid, but they were not much better. The trio rolled under the table. At length another, less affected by the wine, took him by the feet and dragged him into an adjoining room, where they left him. This first scene seemed strange enough to me, for I had never before seen a priest intoxicated. But what astonished me was the laughter of the other priests over the spectacle. When the priests and their friends had sung, laughed, and drank for more than an hour, Mr. Varin rose and said, "The ladies must not be left alone all the evening. Will not our joy and happiness be doubled if they were pleased to share them with us?" This proposition was applauded, and we passed into the drawing room where the ladies awaited us. Several pieces of music, well executed, gave new life to this part of the entertainment. This resource, however, was soon exhausted. Besides, some of the ladies could well see that their husbands were half drunk, and they felt ashamed. Mr. Varin feared nothing more than an interruption in the festivities, which frequently took place in his parsonage. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let us entertain no dark thoughts on this evening, the happiest of my life. Let us play blind man's bluff. Let us play blind man's bluff was repeated by everybody. But whose eyes shall be covered first? Asked the priest. Yours, Mr. Baron, cried the ladies. We look to you for the good example, and we shall follow it. Mr. Baron consented, and immediately one of the ladies placed her nicely perfumed handkerchief over the eyes of her priest and led him to the center of the room, giving him a gentle push. She said, Mr. Blind Man, let everyone flee. Woe to him who is caught. There is nothing more curious and comical than watching a man walk when he is intoxicated, especially if he wishes nobody to notice it. Such was the position of Priest Baron. He would take one forward and two backward steps, and would then stagger to the right and to the left. Everybody laughed to tears. One after another, they would all either pinch him or touch him gently on his arm, his hand, or shoulder, and passing rapidly off, would exclaim, Run away! Suddenly, he caught the arm of a lady who had come too near. She struggled in vain to escape, but the priest's hand held her firmly. Using her other hand, he tried to touch her head so he might know the name of his pretty captive, but at that moment his legs gave way, dragging his beautiful parishioner to the floor. She turned upon him in order to escape, but he soon turned on her in order to hold her better. Although the affair lasted only a moment, it was long enough to cause the ladies to blush and cover their faces. This ended the game. Never in my life had I seen anything so shameful. Only the women felt ashamed because the men were too intoxicated to blush. The priests were either too drunk or too much accustomed to such scenes to be ashamed. On the following day, every one of those priests celebrated Mass and ate what they called the body and blood, the soul and divinity of Jesus Christ, just as if they had spent the previous evening in prayer and meditation on the laws of God. Thus, O perfidious Church of Rome, thou deceivest the nations who follow thee, and ruinest even the priest whom thou makest thy slaves.